Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference presented by Michael J. Schoenfeld, Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at Duke University. The session is entitled Facing the Music.
I'd like to welcome you to EDUCAUSE 2008 in this session, which is entitled Facing the Music. We know that the music and video sharing debate has created unprecedented political and public relations challenges. And so with that, IT leaders seem to be in the middle of the crossfire. So we're definitely glad to have Michael Schoenfeld here to provide some strategies that can help us meet the challenge. Michael Schoenfeld is, as of July of this year, is the Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at Duke University. Prior to that, he served 4 years as Vice Chancellor of Public Affairs at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. As we know, Nashville is the Music City USA, and he worked closely with the music industry there. So we're definitely glad to have him here, and we would like to welcome Michael Schoenfeld.
Thank you, Sonia. I can see I overdressed for the conference, but somebody tells me I'm going to give a speech, I'm going to look the part. Just one amendment to the bio. I actually served for 12 years as the Vice Chancellor for Public Affairs at Vanderbilt, which gave me the opportunity to spend 12 years interacting with the music industry and with the many parts of the music industry that are vitally concerned with the issue of file sharing, downloading, and whatever else we want to call it. So I have a few scars, as I'm sure you do, but also some interesting insights. Let me tell you what I am going to, what I'm not going to do today. What I'm not going to do today is talk about the cost of DMCA compliance, packet shaping, bandwidth throttling, or whether or not college networks should be treated as ISPs. There's a whole lot of people here in this building right now who know a heck of a lot more than I do about all of those issues, have a lot more experience and far more knowledge and insights, and I won't pretend to certainly won't pretend to tell you your business about this. What I do want to talk about, though, for at least the next few minutes and hopefully engage in some conversation and some dialogue, are the political and to communications and message aspects of what has become a very pervasive issue for, certainly for IT professionals. It's become a somewhat pervasive issue for those of us who deal with public relations, public affairs, and government relations, and probably at some level hasn't become enough of an issue for the leadership of the colleges and universities that we work at. So there's no question that there is the issue of file sharing, downloading of music, theft, depending on how you refer to it or think about it, of copyrighted material is pervasive on our campus. It's pervasive in our culture, and it has created the impression, at least among certainly among the those involved in the music and television industry, but even broader among policymakers and among the general public at large, that somehow American college students who live on campus, that very rarefied number of individuals in this country, are somehow single-handedly responsible for virtually all of the piracy, theft, and transmission of copyrighted material, thus leading to the near downfall of the music industry and the and the teetering of the video and television and film industry. That, at least, is part of the popular culture, whether we like it or not. It is a perception that is out there and that we just have to deal with, and hopefully have to deal with aggressively. Little bit of history and background worth thinking about. I was trying to find when it first came about that, or what were some of the earliest references to to this issue at least in the popular press. I know it's obviously been an issue for technology specialists for far longer. But if you go back 10 years, really more than 10 years, you have this this quote at the very end of a rather quaint-sounding article from The Economist. And I love quotes from The Economist because there's nothing more arch than a British publication taking a look at American politics and business. But this article on this rather interesting phenomena of hackers taking music from CDs or even Perish the Thought from albums and sending the music to each other, much like rogue computer programs on computer viruses, concluded rather presciently by saying that, quote, rather than prosecuting the hackers, the record companies ought to be enlisting them. For one thing is glaringly obvious. The underground music networks are pioneering a more efficient form of distribution that the record companies would do well to emulate. That was 10 years ago. And we're obviously still having the debates. Not only are we having this playing the same game of jujitsu legally, technologically, politically, and from a public relations standpoint, but it doesn't seem that we have made much progress on either side in that front. This could. This could easily be a lament that one of us or somebody in the technology world could be making even today. On background, as we think about these things, it's also useful to think about how the industry and how those who we are working with and negotiating with. Tend to think of this. And another take on it is the idea that theft of copyrighted material is a crime, and one way that we describe crimes, at least in the judicial U.S. judicial system, is by the need to convince a jury that those who are guilty have the means, the motive, and the opportunity to commit the crime. So if you think about it, file sharing on a college network, or really the individuals who are doing committing the file sharing on a college network, fit this issue almost perfectly. The means for doing so are the fact that we have now and have had for many years digital reproductions of content, whether it's film or video or music. We have the internet, which provides free transmission at very high rates of speed, as quickly globally as it does locally. And we have file sharing programs that essentially make it automatic and automated, make it very easy to do this, conduct this kind of activity. We have motive. It is, what could be more compelling than getting free music and television? And we have the opportunity, which campus networks provide to us. The one of the costs of being among the most advanced infrastructures in technology, always at the leading edge, is and providing that kind of service to freely to students and to faculty and others means that things can happen on it. Now, many of you are familiar with the Higher Education Opportunity Act, the new revision of the Higher Education Act. What the Higher Education Act did, among many other things, 2,000 pages worth of things, was to codify, essentially codify, the long-standing, long-term approach that higher education has generally used in addressing the file sharing issue over the last over these last number of years. It's a and while every institution is different, and while every university and college has a somewhat different approach to things, which is both a strength and a liability, we have essentially rested on a three-legged stool, if you will, of education. And in this, in the Higher Education Opportunity Act, the Congress and now the Department of Education has enshrined that into law by requiring students, by requiring us as universities to inform students that unauthorized duplication of copyrighted material, including unauthorized peer-to-peer file sharing, may subject the students to civil and criminal liabilities. I mean, that is essentially the core of our education activities. There's a lot more, obviously, to it. But now, in addition to wanting to do it, we have to do it. Enforcement. We need to inform students that unauthorized distribution of copyrighted material, including unauthorized peer-to-peer file sharing, may subject the students to civil and criminal liabilities. So enforcement being the second leg of the triad. And then providing alternatives. Probably the most amorphous, I guess, of our approach and strategy. But fortunately, thanks to the wisdom of Congress, it is now enshrined into law with all of the appropriate language to make sure that nothing is actually directed. So, to the extent practicable, the four most important words in legislation, to the extent practicable, offer alternatives to illegal downloading or peer-to-peer distribution of intellectual property as determined by the institution in consultation with the chief technology officer or other designated officer of the institution. So we now legally have the requirement, although again, with those four great words of to the extent practicable, which no lawyer or constitutional scholar has ever effectively and directly defined, we are now legally in the business of at least making an effort to provide alternatives to illegal downloading or peer-to-peer distribution. So that is a little bit of the background. That's the law. We seem to be as a sector, as an industry, if you will, we seem to be constantly grappling with how do we deal with the file sharing issue. How do we deal with our own constituents, students most notably, but also others who work on campus, in trying to address an issue that, at least at some level, many of us are not convinced is our problem. Certainly, things are happening on our networks, and we have students enrolled in our universities that. That are doing things, but there's, I think, far from unanimity in our community that about the extent to which this is an issue for us, all other things being equal. Now, obviously, when you have to deal with DMCA notices, when you have your students being sued, when you have the publicity of being on various top 25 lists. Many of us want to be on top 25 lists, but there are some that you don't want to be on, and I think it's fair to say that the RIAA and the MPAA top 25 violators, top 25 offender list is one that we don't necessarily seek to trumpet in our various alumni magazines and news releases. So where does that leave us? It leaves us, and again, I'm fast-forwarding through a lot of things because I really want to get to some discussion. It leaves us with or puts us in a position that has probably more issues and problems that we have to confront. We have to thread a needle. As higher education, we have very few blunt instruments, but we do have a lot of needle threading that we have to do. And the file sharing debate has created for us both imposed on us, and also we have imposed on ourselves a number of problems and dilemmas, if you will, that lead to that make it far more difficult than you might expect to come up with a coordinated and a cohesive response. First, we are at odds, unfortunately and sadly, but we are at odds with an industry that has had a disrupted business model. 10 years ago, it was predicted 10 years ago by the popular press, probably predicted even earlier before then by those who really knew what they were talking about. But nonetheless, much like the automobile industry has seen its business model disrupted, certainly now financial services, music, entertainment, broadly defined, has seen its business model disrupted tremendously by the advent, the growth, and now the pervasiveness of digital transmission. We feel, and I think I'm not going to take a poll in this room, but I think that many of us who have been studying the issues, or many of you who have been studying the issues, I don't pretend to be a scholar of it, believe that at its base, the impact of higher education on the illegal file sharing issue has been very much overstated. And I know there are many, many studies out there that either do or purport to show a wide range of activity. Some of the most recent information that I have heard in conversations with key people at EDUCAUSE who have been, and other universities who have been working with the industry and have not had these figures disputed, indicate that at most about 20% of the file sharing issue, the file sharing problem as measured in downloads and dollars, can be attributed to college students. And since only about 20% of college students actually live on campus and thus access campus networks, one could make an argument or at least find some data that would demonstrate that the maybe 3 to 4% of the cost to the recording industry and to the film industry has come from college students on campus. Now, if you were to ask if you were to ask the average person on the street, certainly the person in the music business or many policymakers, quick answer: what is the single biggest cause of the problems in the music industry? I think, because of the publicity over in recent years, I think many of them would answer without hesitation, college students are downloading music and thus causing the demise of the music industry as we know it. So the data and the reality, we all know, don't match up. The problem is that we have a very difficult time trying to figure out just what is right, just what is correct, and then promulgating that information and that data in a very compelling way. We in higher education have for a long time insisted that this is a technology problem and thus has been outsourced essentially to you. Addressing the file sharing issue has been, on many campuses I would suspect, has been put into a box that has the label technology or CIO on it. And has been handed to you as a problem to solve. Because surely, the reasoning goes, surely there is a technology solution to this, and thus we are in the position of constantly having to play catch-up with technology solutions that don't necessarily exist. Certainly, the student affairs professionals, other leaders on campus, general counsels and attorneys are involved, but we have, as a community, insisted that this is a technology problem. Perhaps one of the more frustrating issues that we have confronted and also been put on the defensive about is one could say we have lost the moral high ground. We are in the interesting and unique position as institutions of higher education pursuing what we believe are and what the public believes are noble goals. We have been put in the position of having to defend the moral decisions of our students and institutions. We're being lectured to about morals by segments of the business community that I think it's fair to say we don't believe we should be. So at some level, by agreeing for all the right reasons, by agreeing that this is part of our mission and an educational issue and thus a part of what we should be doing, we have also ceded the moral high ground. Likewise, we feel like we are being unfairly targeted. And getting back to the issue of data, of how we identify the problem, colleges and universities, especially those with high visibility, with high name recognition, provide a very good target. They provide almost a guaranteed source of media coverage when you're talking about societal trends and societal concerns. Things that happen on college campuses get media attention when if they happened in any neighborhood or any city or on the street or just among a random assortment of people would get very little attention. So the fact that that the behavior and the activity that we're talking about happens on college campuses and happens with the with college students is guaranteed to get attention. And we all know that that there is a fascination in the media, especially with universities that and colleges that people have heard of. So it does lead to, and I think not without some legitimacy, a feeling within the higher education community that that higher education in general has been unfairly targeted as a source of crimes and violations. It's also very interesting, I think, that the periodic lists of the top violators, the top offenders, if you will, that are put out by the various watchdog groups and associations tend to track pretty consistently with the U.S. News and World Report top 25 of universities as well, regardless of size and scale and location. So I just offer that as an interesting aside or an interesting outcome of what we have been advised is a purely random process. Another problem that you all face with far more acuity, I think, than most. I think it's fair to say that the leadership of our institutions wants this to go away. You would be hard pressed to find college presidents or provosts for whom this is an important issue, for whom this is something that they want to either take a stand or make a position. I think it's in our heart of hearts. We know that that a predominant feeling within many of our institutions and beyond is to make this go away, and thus having it land right back on your desk as in a big box wrapped IT. Two other issues. If this were, if we were all part of a single coherent body, if we were all part of a single system, we might have a very different way of approaching these things, but we're not. We are here as executives and leaders and representatives of institutions of higher education, 4,400 of them around the country, each, for the most part, aggressively independent, independent in their operations, in the way that they deal with policies, and while we all look for best practices, we do not have on this or frankly any other, very few issues, do we have a coordinated way to deal with federal and state legislative activities and national campaigns. We have a multiplicity of associations in Washington and elsewhere that do very important work on our behalf, but again, I think all of us know the structural difficulties inherent in trying to advance any kind of position within higher education, whether it is even a basic question about whether college is affordable, or more precisely, how college can be affordable to the public. So imagine trying to get coordination and coherence in drilling down into something that is both very decentralized like this issue and also has a highly motivated, well-funded, very adept, very capable, and very strategic set of opponents on the other side. And finally, as I mentioned before, colleges do attract media and political attention. Things that happen, again, and it bears repeating, things that happen on college campuses will inevitably get more attention than if they happen elsewhere. So the behavior that takes place on a campus network because it's affiliated with a college is just going to get more attention than what happens on an ISP, than what happens on Verizon or Comcast or AT&T or Time Warner or anything else. It is just a fact of life. So at one level, we can feel like the Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner, although I'd be hard-pressed to tell you on any given day who was Wile E. Coyote and who was the Roadrunner. That's just the fact of life. So what do we do about it? How do we think about these things? Well, I would argue and I would suggest that we probably need a new or at least different way of thinking about and articulating the both the cost of the file sharing issue to us, how we plan to address it, and taken to their logical end, what some of these legislative and legal and political and technological fixes that are being advocated by people who, let's face it, don't have our interests at heart, what they might mean ultimately to college campuses. This is far more than just a matter of playing cat and mouse with and playing catch up with people who are doing the kind of behavior that we all agree should not be happening. So I'd like to suggest, and this is a little bit of a sneak preview of some work that some of us within higher education, convened by EDUCAUSE but representing institutions as well, have been thinking about in terms of articulating a somewhat different message, framing a somewhat different debate, hopefully gaining some consensus and some interest on the part of higher education in engaging in a different kind of dialogue with the public about file sharing. And I'd say that they come down to not playing necessarily the same game that that we have been playing before. So first and foremost on this list, although it's not necessarily in the it's not necessarily in the priority order, is retelling, recasting, and re-energizing the very important notion. In fact, I'd say it's not a notion, it's a statement of fact, that college campuses are about innovation. Innovation happens on college campuses. Technological innovation, medical innovation, scholarly innovation, all kinds of innovation takes place on college campuses. Campus networks, with the technology that we provide to our students and to our faculty and to our staff and others, facilitate that innovation and make it possible for people for individuals and for groups to create new knowledge and to create new companies and to create new businesses and, in fact, indeed, to create new industries. And that by putting us in the position of having to throttle back, adjust, or in any way be wary about working with our networks, that we run the very real risk as institutions, as universities, of stifling innovation. Now, we also know that there are no innovations that happen on our campus or elsewhere that don't disrupt something else. When innovation happens, there are winners, there are losers, there are changes that that happen that are unintended, that are part of the unintended consequences, and as a result, we need to encourage, and we need to be speaking perhaps more loudly as a sector to those who want us to essentially throttle back on innovation, that what we really need to do is promote new business models. One could say that the situation that we're in right now with the recording and film industry is a decade-long, in fact, maybe decades-long case study of how new business models do and don't develop. So we perhaps, and I'm just testing this out because it's not a necessarily a statement of fact, but perhaps we need to be, as a sector and as a community, more aggressive in challenging the current business models that are out there for the delivery of content, for the creation and the delivery of content. We need to focus on proportionality. I mentioned some numbers before. You all probably have far more data about the proportion of the problem that confronts the music, recording, and film industry right now that can be directly connected to colleges and universities. But we haven't really said that perhaps as loudly as we could or maybe should. There is a matter of proportionality that that we need to be more forthright about presenting and also not apologize for. You know, these things happen on our networks, but the response that both the public and the policymakers and at least some in the industry have proposed is not at all proportionate to the scale of the problem that we face. Technology, and this is perhaps not as elegantly worded as hopefully it will be once we get through more massaging of these messages. Technology is not the problem, but it can be the solution. That is, the villains here are not campus networks. The villains are not servers on colleges and universities. The villains are not wireless networks and other kinds of networks that are available to students on college campuses. They are not the villains. They are again, the promoters of innovation. But technology, working collaboratively, can be a solution, and we very much want to be part of that solution. We need to challenge inaccurate or incomplete data. And this is not an easy thing to do, because getting accurate and complete data on these kinds of issues can be very difficult. It can be time consuming. It can be expensive, it too can be challenged. But we as a community must continue to do the very important work that many of you are doing to challenge the inaccurate or incomplete data. And we have seen some successes in that over the last couple of years, but we need to continue to do that, because incomplete and inaccurate data unchallenged becomes gospel. So in much the same way that everybody knows that the downloading problem is caused by a bunch of college students on campus going wild, we need to be in the position to at least put more context, to at least frame the debate around the data that we know is accurate. And we need to be able to challenge those things that are inaccurate. And this is not insignificant, but it's not the sole driver of the messages here. There are positive uses for peer-to-peer networks. Peer-to-peer networks on college campuses have become the villain, much like college campuses have. There are positive uses, and I have found that that in conversations with people, with advocates, and who are on the other side, if you will, that there is a very distinct lack of knowledge that peer-to-peer, broadly defined, and the kinds of same kinds of transmission, the same kinds of systems and services that are facilitating the illegal sharing of files and of copyrighted material, that there are positive, important uses for it in research and education. In discovery, whether it is in the transmission of large files of related to biomedical research, or new uses for astronomy, or all of the other things that you know a heck of a lot better than I do, there are the only we need to counter and combat the perception that the only thing that happens on college campus networks is peer-to-peer, is music and video and television file sharing. Finally, and back to the money, back to the business issue, we have to remember too that fundamentally, this, as you all know, this is about money and markets. It's not about morals. At some point, no doubt, there will be some market or business connected solution or partial solution to all of this, but we can't continue. I would argue we can't continue to have this be positioned among the public as a moral issue, that somehow colleges and universities on this one issue and this issue alone are falling down and failing in their moral obligations to their students. That gets to proportionality as well. So when there's an old saying in Washington, as many of you know, when they say it's not about the money, it's about the money. So there is a business, there is a business and a market compromise here somewhere, and obviously we haven't found it yet, but clearly it does exist. So finally, what can, from my humble perch here, what can CIOs do or really continue to do, which many of you are doing already, and many of you are doing this very well, and you're doing many more things, I'm sure, that are important. First, we need to continue the education and enforcement efforts. This by taking perhaps over time a new approach to dealing with public affairs and political issues, we cannot for a moment let down our continuing efforts in education and in enforcement. Those are education is what we do and we should do it. Enforcement is both policy and law, and we need to do that as well. I know many of you work with your student affairs professionals and with your legal offices and operations offices, finance and whatnot. For those who are not partnering with your government relations and public affairs offices on campus, I would urge you to do so. Much as we're talking about this issue here among information technology professionals, I know for a fact, because I've been party to these discussions at public affairs meetings and gatherings of people who are in my positions at colleges and universities around the country, we talk a lot about this as well. Obviously, we don't have the technology solutions, but we are dealing with legislators at the state level, we're dealing with members of Congress, we're dealing with policymakers, we're dealing with the media, we're dealing with parents and others who are genuinely curious or concerned about how we plan to address this and what we seek to do. Obviously, the answers to those questions are pretty amorphous themselves, but to the extent that you can have a understanding and a relationship with your government relations and public affairs offices on campus around an issue, this is the issue to do it. Third, I encourage you, although I doubt it requires any kind of encouragement at all, to be active and willing participants in data collection, in data analysis, and in advocacy efforts. The more information that we have that can be that can put the context for this, put this issue into context and provide foundation for us, the better off we'll be. And that obviously can only be done with the cooperation and the collaboration of the you on the campus level. I'm sure all of you are doing this right now. We need to monitor the cost and effort required to address notices, lawsuits, and other enforcement efforts. We know there is a real cost to this. You articulate it every day to the people that you work with at your institutions. There's some new information out, a new report out that about the cost of this nationally. We need to also put it into human terms. A $500,000 or $1 million on a campus is maybe $1 million out of a multi-billion-dollar budget, but it's also X number of scholarships. It's X amount of financial aid. It is new books for the library. So to the extent that we're dealing with dollars and cents, especially those cost to us, the things that are costing us money, purely from a message standpoint, we need to always remember to put those into human terms and into understandable terms. There's a lot of interest. There would be a lot of interest and support in the public for initiatives that that direct money to individuals for teaching and for learning and for scholarships. Talking about multi-million dollar expenditures out of even larger budgets from an institution standpoint is not nearly as compelling as what that means individual. So I would encourage you as you tally these costs to perhaps work with your public affairs office to identify ways in which we can humanize and we can make very relevant and very real the cost to our institutions of complying with and addressing this issue on campus. Likewise, I hope you will hear more over time about the importance of innovation as it relates to this issue. We're talking about the possibility of legal and political constraints in our institutions that could stifle innovation. This is what we're about. So as you identify all of the other interesting, fascinating, and essential things that happen on networks, I would encourage you as you are talking with your colleagues on campus and outside and others who are interested in this to be focused on innovation, to be focused on constantly identifying the ways in which campus networks and which the technology which we use is also used for innovation. And finally, and I know I don't need to say this because it is what you do. As a community, as a higher education community, we perhaps have been in the recent past, not unanimously, but not across the board, but perhaps we have been a bit too reactive to what we see as attacks from the outside, and I would suggest that we need to be more proactive in developing alternatives. That's not only technology and that's not only education, but imagine the political power, imagine the business power that the economic power that we could flex on this issue if we were to work together as a higher education community and put some heft behind some of the alternatives that we might come up with. Finally, there's nothing better than ending a rather dry presentation with a cartoon. We're not the only ones that are thinking about file sharing. Thank you for your time. We've got a few minutes, and I'd love to hear your thoughts and suggestions and ideas, because like much of what we do, these kinds of things are very much a work in progress, and there are, I can assure you that there are many people in not just in the technology associations and not just in the information technology world who are interested in, concerned about, and eager to partner with you on ways in which we can address this most pernicious, pervasive, and I would say frustrating issue that that we confront. Thank you very much. We have a few minutes if anybody has thoughts. Yes, sir. I don't disagree with your approach. In fact, one thing that we perhaps one thing that is clear to me and that I talk about a lot when addressing this issue is that there's only one place and one time in your life where there are very real repercussions to doing this, and that's in college. You know, if you're in middle school, if you're in high school, if you're doing it over a commercial network, the likelihood that you're going to be caught is microscopic. Even if you are, there are no real repercussions for it. I mean, obviously you could be sued, but that's a very small number of people. When you're in college operating on a college network, that group, there are very real repercussions because you have an additional code of conduct that you have to comply with. So I don't disagree with your statements. Other thoughts? No. If not, thank you very much for your time, and feel free to call or if I can ever be of assistance to you. Thank you.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Outsourced hosting of multi-format digital media content is available from Real's own CDN, the Real Broadcast Network. Information at rbn.com.